The attacks on our country affected our economy. Corporate scandals affected the confidence of people and therefore affected the economy. My decision on Iraq, this kind of march to war, affected the economy. We've been through a lot, and what those numbers show is the fact we have been through a lot. But what the people must understand is that instead of wondering what to do, I acted, and I acted by cutting the taxes on individuals and small businesses primarily. And and that itself has led to this recovery. And so you show that the numbers, I'm not suggesting the chart only shows the bad numbers, but how about the fact that we're now increasing jobs? Or the fact that unemployment is now down to 5.6%. In other words, we went to a recession, and unemployment went up, and now it's heading in the right direction. The economic stimulus plan that I passed, I asked Congress to pass, and I work with Congress to pass, is making a big difference.
But when you proposed your first tax cut in 2001, you said this was going to generate 800,000 new jobs. Your tax cut of 2003, create 1 million new jobs.
Yeah.
That has not happened.
Well, it's happening. It's happening. And there is good momentum when it comes to the creation of new jobs. Again, we have been through a lot. This economy has been through a lot, which is why I'm so optimistic about the future, because I know what we have been through. And I look forward to the debate on the economy, because I one of the things that's very important is that the entrepreneurial spirit of this country be strong, and the small business sector be strong, and the policies I've laid out enhance entrepreneurship, they encourage small business creation, and I think this economy is coming around just right, frankly.
The General Accounting Office, which are the nation's auditors,
yeah,
have done a study of our finances.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what your legacy will be to the next generation. It says that our current fiscal policy is unsustainable. They did a computer simulation that shows that balancing the budget in 2040 could require either cutting total federal spending in half or doubling federal taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Fiscal conservatives, as you like to call yourself,
right,
would you allow a $500 billion deficit and this kind of deficit disaster?
Sure. Budget I just proposed to the Congress cuts the deficit in half in 5 years. Now, I don't know what the assumptions are in the GAO report, but I do know that if Congress is wise with the people's money, we can cut the deficit in half. And at that point in time, as a percentage of GDP, the deficit would be relatively low. I agree with the assessment that we've got some long-term financial issues we must look at. And that's one reason I asked Congress to deal with Medicare. I strongly felt that if we didn't have an element of competition, that if we weren't modern with the Medicare program, if we didn't incorporate what's called health savings accounts to encourage Americans to take more control over their health care decisions, we would have even a worse financial picture in the long run. I believe Medicare is going to not only make the system work better for seniors, but it's going to help the fiscal situation of our kind of long-term projections. We got to deal with Social Security as well, as you know. I mean, these entitlement programs need to be dealt with. We're dealing with some entitlement programs right now in the Congress. The highway bill, it's going to be an interesting test of fiscal discipline on both sides of the aisle. The Senate's at about 370, as I understand, $370 billion. The House is at less than that, but over $300 billion. And as you know, the budget I proposed is about $256 billion.
But so your base conservatives, listen to Rush Limbaugh, the Heritage Foundation, Cato Institute, they're all saying you're the biggest spender in American history.
No, they're wrong.
Mr. President,
if you look at the appropriations bills that were passed under my watch, in the last year of President Clinton, discretionary spending was up 15%, and ours have steadily declined. And the other thing that I think it's important for the people who watch the expenditures side of the equation is to understand we're at war, Tim. And anytime you commit your troops into harm's way, they must have the best equipment, the best training, and the best possible pay. That's what we owe it to their loved
That's
ones.
That's a very important point. Every president since the Civil War who has gone to war raised taxes, not cut them,
yeah,
raised the pay for the. Why not say, I will not cut taxes anymore until we have balanced the budget? If our situation is so precious and delicate and because of the war, Why do you keep cutting taxes and draining money from the Treasury?
Well, because I believe that the best way to stimulate economic growth is to let people keep more of their own money. And I believe that if you raise taxes as the economy is beginning to recover from really tough times, you'll slow down economic growth. You'll make it harder. See, I'm more worried about the fella looking for the job. That's what I'm worried about. I want people working. I want people to find work. And so when we stimulate the economy, it's more likely that person's going to find work. And the best way to stimulate the economy is not to raise taxes, but to hold the low taxes down.
How about no more tax cuts until the budget is balanced?
That's a hypothetical question, which I can't answer to you because I don't know how strong the economy is going to be. I mean, the president must keep all options on the table, but I do know that lowering the child credit, by thereby raising taxes on working families, does not make sense when the economy is recovering. And that's exactly what some of them are calling for up on Capitol Hill. They want to raise the taxes of the families with children. They want to increase the marriage penalty. They want to get rid of those taxes on small businesses that are encouraging the stimulation of new job creation, and I'm not going to have any of it.
We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back with more of our conversation with the president in the Oval Office right after this.
And you can learn more. Call 1-800-MEDICARE.
And we are back. Mr. President, last time you were on this show, you said that you wanted to change the tone in the nation.
Yeah.
This is Time Magazine. Love him or hate him? Why George Bush arouses such passion and what it means for the country.
Yes.
Tom Daschle, the Democratic leader in the Senate, said that you've changed the tone for the worse, that it's more acrimonious, more confrontations, that you are the most partisan political president he's ever worked with. Our exit polls of primary voters, not just Democrats, but independents in South Carolina, New Hampshire, more than 70% of them said they are angry or dissatisfied with you. And they point to this whole idea of being a uniter as opposed to a divider. Why do you think you are perceived as such a divider?
Gosh, I don't know, because I'm working hard to unite the country. As a matter of fact, it's the hardest part of being the president. I was successful as the governor of Texas for bringing people together for the common good, and I must tell you, it's tough here in Washington, and frankly, it's the biggest disappointment that I've had so far of coming to Washington. I'm not blaming anybody. It's just the environment here is such that it is difficult to find common ground. I'll give you a classic case, the Medicare bill. The Medicare bill was a tough vote, but the Medicare bill was a bill that a lot of people could have signed on to, and had it not been for kind of the sense, well, Bush might win, we might lose, or you know, Bush might lose, we might win kind of attitude. But I'll continue to work hard to unite the country. I don't speak ill of anybody in the process here. I think if you went back and looked at my comments, you'd see that I don't attack. I don't hold up people. I talk about what I believe in, and I lead. And maybe, perhaps, I believe so strongly in what we're doing around the world or doing here at home.
But around the world, in Europe, favorable ratings, unfavorable ratings, 70 in Germany, 67 in France.
You know, but you know, Tim, that...
Why do people hold you in such low
esteem? I don't know. Ronald Reagan was unpopular in Europe when he was a president, according to Jose Maria Aznar. He said, you know something? He said to me, you're nearly as unpopular as Ronald Reagan was. I said, first of all, I'm keeping pretty good company. I think that people, you know, when you do hard things, when you ask hard things of people, it can create tensions, and I don't know why people do what it is. I tell you, though, I'm not going to change. See, I'm not trying to accommodate. I won't change my philosophy or my point of view. I believe I owe it to the American people to say what I'm going to do and do it, and to speak as clearly as I can, try to articulate as best I can why I make decisions I make. But I'm not going to change because of polls. That's just not my nature.
Two polls out this weekend show you...
See, there you're quoting polls.
You're trailing John Kerry in both the USA Today and Newsweek polls by 7 and 5 points.
Yeah.
This is what John Kerry had to say last year. He said that his colleagues are appalled at the, quote, president's lack of knowledge. They've managed him the same way they've managed Ronald Reagan. They send him out to the press for one event a day. They put him in a brown jacket and jeans and get him to move some hay or move a truck, and all of a sudden, he's the Marlboro man. I know this guy. He was 2 years behind me at Yale. I knew him, and he's still the same guy.
Yeah.
Did you know him at Yale?
No.
How do you respond to that?
politics. I mean, this is, you know, if you close your eyes and listen carefully to what you just said, it sounds like the year 2000 all over again.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about
it. What does that mean for America? The conspiracy theorists are going to go wild.
I'm sure they are. I don't know. I haven't seen the web.
Number 322?
First of all, he's not the nominee. Look, I look forward...
Are you prepared to lose?
No, I'm not going to lose.
If you did, what would you do?
Well, I don't plan on losing. I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. I want to lead us. I want to lead this world toward more peace and freedom. I want to lead this great country to work with others to change the world in positive ways, particularly as we fight the war on terror. And we've got changing times here in America too.
Biggest issues in the upcoming campaign.
Who can properly use American power in a way to make the world a better place, and who understands that the true strength of this country is the hearts and souls of the American citizens, who understands times are changing and how best to have policy reflect those times. And I look forward to a good campaign. I know exactly where I want to lead the country. I've shown the American people I can lead. I've shown the American people I can sit here in the Oval Office when times are tough and be steady and make good decisions. And I look forward to articulating what I want to do the next 4 years if I'm fortunate enough to be their president.
Mr. President, we thank you for sharing your views. I hope we can come back and talk about issues during the course of the campaign.
Thank you, Tim.
That's all for today. We'll be back next week. If it's Sunday, it's Meet the Press.
Two lattes.